to Mage Hand High Five. I'm your Dungeon Master, Casey Pappas, and ranked by how likely they are to eat a piece of pizza off the floor.
Oh, no.
First up, least up, Robin Langenhop.
I don't know if it's accurate, but I'm happy to be in this position, Robin Langenhop. Hayden has for sure eaten so much food off the floor. That's just kind of baseline for Hayden. We're going to see what happens with that.
Max Weinberg.
Wow. This was unexpected.
What a twist.
Yeah, I'm playing Stump Steenling, and Stump has probably actively put food onto the floor to eat it.
For seasoning?
Afterwards, to get that seasoning, yeah.
And last, but certainly not least, Rowan McStay.
Hi, I'm Rowan McStay, and I love this. I think it depends on whether it's choose side down or choose side up.
Oh, that's a huge factor.
But playing Salome Briar, and, you know, listen, the gods made dirt, and dirt don't hurt, so that's all right.
And yet at the same time, I feel like Salome for the last several years has been eating food with gloves on.
Oh, yeah. No.
So really kind of going both ways on that.
No, she knows how to use a cutlery set, but like in a pinch, she takes some pizza off the floor.
If any of our listeners out there eat food after it's dropped wet side down.
I've done it. I dropped a peanut butter muffin on the floor the other day. I just scraped the top layer off and ate it.
Wait, there was like peanut butter that touched the ground?
Yes!
Look at me having the ranking correct.
This is a challenging idea.
The disgust that everyone just looked at me with. I don't like wasting food.
Our relationship has changed.
Good.
All right. Well, let's dive right in. Last time on Mage Hand High Five, Hayden pleaded with the group to help save the head assassin, revealed now to be Rat. Salome nearly shot Rat, but decided against it and fended off the Otyug to save him. A black stone in Rat's temple seemed to be suppressing his identity, but the group decided to worry about this later and knocked him out. The group, Maverick, and an unconscious Rat headed to the sink, where Hayden disguised themselves as Rat to confront Courtois. The rest of the group held back, ready to strike. Inside, Hayden interrupted Courtois, preparing to torture Charlie for information about the others. In her questioning, Courtois suggested that the group knows something about the church that they shouldn't. When Courtois ordered Rat to dispose of Charlie as a test of faith, Hayden attacked her. The group fought, but before anything could be settled, Courtois destroyed the back wall of the sink, letting river water come flooding in. Where we are now, the sink has begun to fill with river water. You see all of the prisoners in their cages start shaking the bars, screaming, let us out! Let us out!
Oof.
Keep in mind that this dungeon is 3/4 of the way sunk into the bog. As the room is 40 feet high, anyone below 30 feet will drown in a few turns.
Charlie, we're coming to get you, honey. Don't worry.
It is still Courtois' turn. She used an attack spell on the wall. So as a bonus action, she is going to attack you, Salome, with her whip.
Okay.
That is a 19 to hit.
That'll hit.
That is 4 points of slashing damage and 4 points of fire damage.
I'll take it.
As this whip slashes down on you, and she says, I will absolve you of your sins.
Honey, all we gotta do is get out of here alive. We already know what you did.
She smiles and says, one of you will die. You can kill me or you can save your friend.
Well, that may very well be true. I don't think you have to worry about dying today so much as you do everybody finding out what you've been up to. And trust me, as soon as we get out of here with our friend, everybody is gonna know.
That puts some concern on her face.
Great, because I still don't know what she did.
Wait a minute. You do need to roll a deception check.
I mean, I'm pretty sure that she, like, put a hit on a gang of orphans.
She did. Well, I think she's in cahoots with the Jamesons, too. I think there's a lot of shit going on. That is a 21.
Oh, her passive insight is 19.
Yeah.
All right.
you see like a slight twitch in her left eyebrow, and that is all that gives away that you have gotten under her skin.
Oh, I can't wait, darling. I'm going to tell everybody who'll listen.
Next in the order is LaMarche. LaMarche is going to come in and shout, "Pardon my French, but what the hell are y'all doing?
Y'all just get her. Just punch her. Please."
Y'all, I wonder if we should just start grabbing folks and trying to get the hell out.
We got to get Rat, too.
Yeah.
Did you lock him in?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Wait, how many other prisoners are in here?
I will say there are three prisoners.
Okay.
LaMarche takes stock of the scene, sees that this is like a no-win scenario, and goes to try and unlock the cage to get Rat out because he knows that Rat's important.
All right.
Great.
There is just a fucking dead guard on the ground.
Yeah.
He swipes up a key ring and clicks open the lock on Rat's cell, picks up Rat, carries him outside. And that will be LaMarche's turn.
Oof.
Next in the order is Salome.
Is LaMarche able to, like, toss me those keys on the way out?
I don't think he can toss you the keys and pick up Rat, so I think he's just going to drop the keys.
Oh, great. Has Courtois moved at all?
No.
Okay. Well, I just talked a big game, and I'm going to try to back it up. I'm going to try to grab the keys and run for Charlie.
Okay. She is going to make an attack of opportunity on you.
Yeah, I'll bet she is.
That is a 17 to hit.
Misses.
Oh,
I love that. I love that 18 AC.
You feel the heat of the whip as it passes by your back, but does not touch you.
Oh, it shudders a little bit. I run and grab the keys, run to Charlie.
I'll say that you can't quite get to Charlie on this turn. They're still about 45 feet from you.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to run as far as I can and then cast Eldritch Blast, shoot at like the stone surrounding the locks. Like, now that the room has lost some integrity, I want to try to like break up the stones around the locks that are holding Charlie.
Okay.
To try to basically break at least their arms free or their wings free.
Roll an attack throw against the stone.
Okay. Those are both with Eldritch Blast. Those are both unnatural 20s.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Those hit.
Okay. One of them is 8 damage and one of them is 3 damage.
You see the bolts smash into the wall. On one, it's enough to loosen it, not enough to, like, completely smash it away. The other one weakens it a little bit, but doesn't loosen it completely.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
All right, ready to go for next time.
Great. Next in the order is Stump.
So I run past Salome and grab one of the keys, or grab the ring of keys, and go and undo one of Charlie's ankle locks.
Great, you click it open. The water has now risen 3 feet.
Gee, that's up to my neck.
So you're going to need a piggyback ride out of here?
Yeah, I'll float.
That's fair.
It's only 3/4 of the way.
Yeah, how's your swimming?
Next in the order is Hayden.
You think you made a clever play there, but my friends can take care of things. You still get to die. And I'm going to keep firing at her.
Ooh.
Okay.
That's a nat 20.
Yeah, Colonel Courtois.
It's a nat 19.
Oh, devastating.
And that's another nat 20.
Another nat 20?
Oh, my God.
I'm going to get some dice together. Give me a moment.
Oh, devastating.
That is a total of 28 damage.
Oh, she did not teleport, so she takes all of that.
Yes.
Oh, you fire crossbows. Boom, boom. Both of them hit her in the stomach. And it is, she's beginning to not look great.
All right.
I shouldn't, but I think I'm going to hold my ground.
Okay.
Oh, actually, you know what? If we're rising 3 feet around, I'm going to be underwater next round anyway. So I'll run back to the others.
Okay.
Don't you want to finish the job that you ordered a year ago?
She smiles and says, "I have every intention of doing so." She steps backward, the 15 feet out of the room. A wall of fire covers your exit out of here.
Oof. That's going to get doused pretty soon, isn't it?
It is going to get doused, however far the water is. it is going to hang around above the water.
Okie dokie.
All right.
For the rest of her turn.
Oh, she's got more. She's just hanging out.
You can't see because she's on the other side of the wall of fire right now. Next in the order is LaMarche. However, LaMarche is on the other side of the wall of fire right now.
Huh.
So you cannot see what he's doing for his action.
Yep.
I will say, Stump and Salome, you do not know that the wall of fire exists yet because you are dead set on freeing Charlie.
Oh, God. We also can't hear anything because of the silence spell, right?
Yeah, I can totally drop the silence now.
Cool.
I'll let go of concentration. It's not helping us anymore.
You drop the silence, and as it's sort of a... It does sort of the opposite of the effect that it did before, and as it dies away, there's the roaring of the water just coming down on all of you now.
Oh, this seems so much worse now.
Yeah, this is bad. Charlie, how you doing?
Charlie's just like, like just full out screaming, like no words, just intelligible screaming.
It's okay, we got you, we got you.
Great. Salome, your turn.
And we can only get one lock off per turn? There's not like an action bonus action thing?
Yeah, unless you like smash the locks with like two separate attacks or something.
All right, I don't know where Charlie is in initiative, so I'm gonna unlock one of their arms.
Okay.
And then give them the key in the arm that I unlocked and say, all right, honey, Stump and I are trying to get you unlocked, but you try to get yourself out too, okay?
Charlie rolled a nat 20.
Ooh.
On their initiative. So they will start that on the next turn. Anything else?
I got nothing else I can do.
Next in the order is Stump.
So I grab the keys from Charlie that Salome just gave to them and undo their legs.
Somebody's
their last leg
them.
Lock.
We can just pass them around.
Charlie goes, okay, I've got the... okay.
Next stop.
I'm going to book it out into the hallway. How far can I get? I have 60 feet with my bonus action dash.
Mm. Well, here's the thing. How much water is it until it becomes difficult terrain?
Oh, for Stump, 100% like right around. Now. If it's 3 feet, yeah, okay. He's not tall.
Okay, then I will say, like, since you're sloshing around in it up to your neck, I will say that you are probably in difficult terrain. You're able to make it halfway across.
Okay, that's fair.
As you emerge from the room, you see a massive wall of fire blocking the exit.
Oh my God, what? What happened out here?
I made her mad.
You good?
I made her mad. That's on me.
There's a wall of fire.
In fairness, I thought she'd be dead before she could do it.
Well, hell.
It's now the end of the round. You see the water rise another 3 feet. It is starting to get high. Stump, you are definitely swimming at this point.
How's Charlie?
Charlie is floating.
Okay.
The chains restrict them a little. You think that, like, this turn, it's not going to be bad. Next turn, it will be bad.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. Top of the order is Hayden.
All right. We've got both arms left?
No. Salome got one of the arms, so there's only one arm left.
Oh, Salome did get one of the arms.
I did.
And Stump got the other leg, so there's only one arm left.
And both legs are already good, so it's just the one lock?
Both legs are already good, so there's just the one lock.
I mean, no reason to do anything other than remove that last lock. So pop Charlie free and say, I don't think we're getting out the other way. There's a wall of fire. Is there anything we can do to get these bars open up here?
Does it look like there is?
Yeah, can I like roll to figure out the integrity of the bars or something?
Yeah, roll investigation.
We could also swim under the wall of fire, right?
We could swim all under the wall of fire. That's
Oh, that's true.
I don't know how great of a swimmer Charlie is.
Yeah.
Being a bird.
I'm trying to figure out if you can swim in mithril chain.
Well, I don't think you can swim in heavy armor, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, you can't swim in heavy armor, but I think mithril is technically light, so I think I can swim in it.
It's a 15 investigation.
Okay. With a 15, you think, like, these bars, they're the bars to a prison, so they are sturdy, but they are not indestructible. Like, a powerful blast, strong magic, really powerful attack could blast these open.
You know what? Fuck it. I want to get that woman.
Oof.
And I start swimming for the other door.
Okay.
Y'all, those bombs are there if you want to try and use them.
Yeah, let's swim through the door. Seems fun.
Next in the order is Courtois,
who is dead from LaMarche punching her out while we couldn't see it. Give Courtois an off-screen death.
Yeah, that's satisfying.
Everyone gets an off-screen death.
Because it's a podcast?
Yeah. Suppose.
Now.
Great. Courtois takes her turn. Next in the order is Charlie. Charlie is going to start swimming. Just going to follow your lead, Hayden. Next in the order is LaMarche. LaMarche takes his turn. Salome.
Okay. I will start swimming out the door. On the way out, I will try to Eldritch Blast one of the locks on one of the prisoner's doors. Don't know.
Okay.
I just kind of pick one at random.
Sure.
20 and a 19 to hit one of the locks.
Yeah, you do. Roll some damage against the lock.
Great. 10 damage.
Yeah, you blast open one of the locks.
Okay.
And one of the prisoners starts to swim out.
I do not think I can get the other two.
The water rises another 3 feet.
Wait, what about my turn?
Oh, yeah, I guess you can go.
So I moved 30 feet last time. How far from the wall of fire am I?
You're still another 15 or so feet.
15?
Yeah.
Great. I'm going to use my movement speed to swim under the wall of fire. So that's going to be 15 feet.
Okay. Like, once you get there, there is sort of the staircase out. You're able to get onto the staircase.
Great. So I'm going to use 15 feet, the 15 feet of my movement in swimming to get under the wall of fire. I'm going to use my bonus action dash to run 30 feet. What do I see?
Outside.
My dark vision is adjusted. Oh, no, it's not because it's still dark. Never mind.
I swear to God, if you guys bring up dark vision one more time.
I'm gonna quit
my
this podcast.
My name is Stump Dark Vision Steenling.
You emerge from the sink. You see Courtois, one hand extended, orange flame wreathing it as she sort of keeps the wall of fire going. You see Maverick LaMarche hanging from the platform as if he has been pushed off, and he is hanging by a thread. Courtois is standing over him.
Would you say that LaMarche is within 5 feet of Courtois?
Yes.
Can I get sneak attack?
You do. Yeah. Yeah, you do.
Great.
Shenanigans.
Love to see it.
Yeah, I'm going to just shoot her with my crossbow.
Get after it.
Okay.
That's a 17.
That's going to hit. Roll some damage.
Well, that's a 6 on the D6 and a 1 on the D8, so that's going to be with the modifier, a total of 11.
You shoot her. Ooh, the wall of fire dissipates.
Ooh. Nice, Stump.
Yes. You shoot her, and she turns around and just straight up hisses at you. Just
right back. Because apparently that's something I do now is make noises back.
You, madam, are no Yolanda.
Great. Top of the order is Hayden.
All right. Well, I am swimming as quickly as my little changeling arms will allow. I'd love to kill Courtois, but right now I'm just swimming.
You just swimming. Swim your movement and dash?
I guess.
And I'll say that you make it to the end of the sink.
All right.
You are on the stairs leading out.
Cool.
So Charlie is going to fly out of the sink and then land on top of it.
Nice.
Okay, that is Charlie. Next in the order is Courtois. Hayden, as you emerge from the sink, you see her looking at Stump, and then her eyes dart to you, and then suddenly she's right in front of you. Like,
oh,
it is just...
No!
We will end this now. And if we both embrace the flame tonight, then so be it.
The flame is bullshit, lady.
She raises a hand and says, "Is this bullshit?" And she is going to cast Firebolt on you.
I didn't think these church folks were allowed to say bullshit.
That is a 26 to hit.
Oh,
believe it or not, that will actually hit.
That is going to be 12 points of fire damage.
Okie dokie. I will not quit back then.
That's the end of her turn. LaMarche is going to try and pull himself back up onto the platform.
Come on, LaMarche.
He starts to scramble. He's not able to, like, get himself all the way up, but he's, like, he's got a better hold now.
You need some help?
Nah, I think I'll just hang out for a while.
Sounds good. I'll let you be.
Absolute ass.
Salome, it is your turn.
Okay, I really want to try to help these other people, but I don't know that we have time. I take a full dash. I swim to the other end of the room. I think that gets me there. And then, like, looking back, is there any way to help these other people, like these other prisoners that are stuck in here still?
You could swim in. However, the sink is now sort of flooded. It doesn't look like there's a whole lot you can do there.
Ugh, okay. I keep moving, I guess.
Stump, I think it's your turn.
How's she looking?
She's looking pretty bad.
Are the stairs where she is open to the river, or are they kind of enclosed?
This whole area is open to the river. Like, there are no guardrails out here.
Okay, we're, can I do a bonus action hide?
Can I ask you, where on earth will you hide? On this...
Casey.
On this exposed...
I'm gonna...
hanging walkway.
I'm going to crawl underneath the hay...
Oh my god.
You absolutely are not.
I guess I'll just run up and take a shove attack on her, try to push her off.
Okay.
That's a 13...
She rolled a 14.
No!
Oh, no.
You stumble. You push her, and she is able to sort of spin, and you both stumble for a second, but neither of you go over.
I'm just going to stab her with a bonus action dagger attack.
Okay.
That's a dirty 20.
That's going to hit.
That's going to be...
So disappointed to hit.
That's going
to
be... Oh, you want to hear disappointment? That's one damage and gets halved. And if it gets rounded down, it's going to be zero.
You hit her and it does nothing.
Oh, no.
And she looks at you and goes, okay.
I then
just disappointed.
Okay.
I then grab a vial of white powder like I did to the cat and just throw it on her. I go, this doesn't do anything.
Just
but...
to add insult to lack of injury.
Yeah, and you deserve this.
Incredible.
It's just like powdered sugar.
Great. You're out of the sink, so the water level doesn't matter as much. Top of the order is Hayden.
Well, that first attack is a nat 1.
Okay.
Second attack is a natural 18, which gives me a 27. And the third attack is a 25.
Okay, those both hit.
15 damage.
Ooh, she's getting down.
That eternal flame has been doing a lot for you, but I think you're about to feel very cold.
Hayden, you see Courtois' eyes sort of look around at the situation. She counts you. She counts Stump. She counts Salome. She counts Charlie. She counts LaMarche. All of you doing fine. She snarls, cracks her whip, and says, "You got lucky. But the flame will always await you. And when I find you again, I will send your soul into the inky blackness outside of the flame's embrace." She pulls a tablet from her belt, raises it, and smashes it over her knee. Light descends upon her. A circle of teleportation opens beneath her, and she's gone. You are all out of combat.
Hayden stares at the place where Courtois used to be for a few beats and then says, get rat. Let's get out of here.
Salome, thinking about the two people that are drowning for having been caught for things probably similar to what she has done, we'll go over and pick up Rat to bring him out of the sink.
Okay.
Stump goes over and helps LaMarche up.
You help him up. He says, thank you.
Yeah, looks like you owe me again.
Yeah, oh, we're quippy now.
I give him a little nudge.
He sort of looks at you and he goes, ah, the quippiness is what I like. It's fun. You all, drenched, begin the climb upward out of this almost literal hellhole. As you climb, Hayden, the unconscious, slumped form of your lost brother hangs under Salome's arm. And you wonder just how much of him is actually left in there. And you wonder just how much the church took from you. Because you believe tonight that you have gained a brother, but you don't know for sure. You all begin the ascent back into civilization and back into a town where, for the first time, you are not wanted.
Oh, Stump is wanted.
Wanted for, not wanted for crimes.
I'm still wanted for crimes, but like not for a bit.
Oh, Stump's not wanted for crimes.
Now that Courtois is gone, it's as quiet as can be with the rivers rushing beneath you. You see the one prisoner that you freed is fleeing up the other ramp and out of sight. And it is dark.
I heard tell about a hotel room, somewhere we can lay low, kind of unpack everything that just occurred over the course of the evening.
Yeah, Salome, who has just kind of, since realizing we couldn't get any of the other prisoners out, has been walking silently with Rat this whole time, just kind of turns around a bit brusquely and just says, the professor's got us a place at the Traveler's Respite. We can go there.
All right. I'm getting the sense we all have a lot to say, and I'd rather do it somewhere where we're the only ones having that conversation.
Mr. LaMarche, you want to come with?
LaMarche actually turns to the group and says, first things first, I think we need to all stop by my office for a little talk.
Yeah, certainly.
Great. LaMarche turns and motions over a courier and says, relay to all the guards that the search for the imposter and the party is to cease. The imposter has been found and dealt with, so if anyone attacks me, it will be me. And like most people, I don't like being attacked.
Can confirm, he does not like being attacked.
The courier frightfully nods, and LaMarche says, good, get going. You ascend the rest of the way to the top of Twin River and head towards the large manor house, the one with the clock tower in it. It is on the opposite side of the now burned auditorium. And this was actually where you sat outside in order to wait for the presentation earlier today.
It's been a day.
Dang.
It has been a day. You head in. The inside is lavishly furnished. There is a large central staircase, grandfather clocks, old-timey wood, sort of mahogany paneling. He leads you into his study. It closes the door behind you, posts some guards on the outside. He goes and sits down in his chair, sort of pinches his nose, and says, all right, before we begin, do any of you smoke?
I do now.
Well,
hell yeah.
There was a period where, you know, actually that unconscious individual that we've been dragging around here instructed me that smoking meant that we wouldn't be as hungry and we wouldn't need to forage for as much food. This is more information than you were really looking for, is it?
He just nods and, like, okay. He then reaches down, he pulls out an ornate cigar box and says, "These are imported." And then hands you, Salome, one.
From where?
From the island of Latere.
Is that where the professor's from?
That is the island of Tartare.
Oh, my gosh.
Tartare and Latere are actually sister islands.
Oh, shoot. Okay, well, if that's the case. Miss LaMarche, you got one of those to spare. We got a friend I think might really appreciate one.
Well, if your friend is going to pass up, then sure, you can have the extra one.
I think you'll get a kick out of it.
He lights up, exhales, and says, "Let's start with the basics. Why are you here?"
I sort of need to start answering your question with a question, which is, did Courtois tell you anything about us and why she might be looking for us?
That was going to be a question later on, but she told me that you were all the company of one stranger, someone that I used to know, and someone who used to run favors for me of a certain kind, if you understand my meaning. And then they swindled me out of a certain amount of money, which we were supposed to get off of a job, and they made for Threed. I was happy for the opportunity to arise to encounter the stranger again. I know nothing else about you except that you were in the company of them. However, I do know who you are. Or rather, I know who you are. And he points at you, Salome.
Yeah, I was afraid you might.
And that'll, of course, lead me to another question that I have here in just a second. But first, why are you here?
We came here to have a conversation with this professor who was having a talk. That's really the only reason we were in town, is just to talk to this one person. And then a whole bunch of shit went down, partially due to yourself attempting to kidnap me, and in fact kidnapping our friend Stump here. Really, trouble followed us here. We weren't really trying to bring any kind of trouble into town.
You'll forgive me if I say that that is, in fact, what they all say. But, answers my question plausibly. Why is Courtois obsessed with killing you, especially if you are not actually the stranger?
You know, that particular question is one that I would love to get the answer to myself. Other than the fact that I happened to dispatch my own predecessor, I can't imagine Courtois has any other particular reason to be interested in me. And yet, here we are, with her not only looking for me, but having my best friend and brother in her employ as some sort of augmented, memory-modified soldier. Seems that she had some sort of vendetta against the gaggle of street urchins to which the two of us were members and dispatched the lot of us. There was something going on that I would love to get to the bottom of, and I do not know where to start, and I don't like it, and I wish that I had my hat and that woman was dead in front of me. I have a lot going on. I'm sorry. I'm just gonna sit right back down again. I just discovered I was standing up again. I'm gonna sit back down.
Hey, why don't you just take this for a minute? I just hand you the cigar. Just,
you know what, I didn't want to do it, but it's comforting.
So we're both in the dark on that one.
I mean, you don't think it has anything to do with the fact that Hayden apparently killed off the previous stranger?
It was a very lucky shot.
Look, if I were in Courtois' shoes, and I was in a place foreign to me, I don't know if I would go that far as to kill someone who killed a former employee of mine. There's a difference between getting revenge for someone you care about and getting revenge for an underling. If any of my men get murdered, that's on them and their family to avenge. I don't know what sort of relationship Courtois had with this underling, but I doubt that it was anything more than a working relationship, and not one that would account for vengeance.
From my final encounter with the original stranger, I took their hat. I obviously saw what their true face looks like. Did I ever learn who that person was? Who the real stranger was?
You saw their true face. When you pulled the hat off, they were just a person. There was nothing special going on underneath. Mm-hmm. They were just like any other person in their position, in that they were scared. Beyond that, you didn't know anything, and you didn't need to know, because you killed them and you were one step closer to your goal.
And what did it get me?
I mean, Stump, didn't you say that she was talking about the possibility of us knowing some secret we shouldn't be knowing? I mean, and I spoke with her briefly and told her we were gonna air out all of her dirty laundry, and she didn't seem too terribly happy about it. I didn't tell her that we didn't know, but I don't know. She seemed afraid that something might get out.
Here's what I will say. When the stranger went after the Pipers, that was the name of our little crew, I was never quite sure who hired the stranger to do it. Now I'm understanding that apparently it was Courtois, but leading up to that point, Rat had been taken on larger and larger jobs. You know, we were street pickpockets. We were just scraping by, trying to get what we could in order to pay for the next meal. But Rat had these highfalutin ideas of getting big scores and robbing rich people and taking all of the spoils. And I always thought that there was, I don't know, he stole something he shouldn't steal or stole from the wrong individual. But if Courtois specifically after me, she must assume that I learned something from the stranger that I shouldn't be knowing, which I didn't. The stranger was no one. I took that hat and it was just a regular old person.
LaMarche pipes up and says, is it something that you might have learned from the stranger, or is it something you might have learned from... And then he points to the tied up rat in the back of the room.
Well, if Rat discovered something, he didn't tell me. Or else I would have been more prepared for something to come down on us.
Well, it's something to keep in mind. Perhaps your friend knows something. Speaking of which, and he snaps his fingers, the doors peek open and a courier pokes their head in, and he says, send someone to go fetch Dr. Merrimack. He might know a little bit about our current arcane situation. And the courier nods and closes the door.
I was actually going to ask if, Stump, if you knew... I know you used to deal in potions and magical maladies and things like that. Do you have any way of determining what's going on with Rat?
I could take a peek. Stump grabs some vials from his... a couple vials from his chest and kind of sniffs both of them and starts to ritual cast both identify and detect magic to kind of see what's going on. Hey, you know what? Why not? Throw it in for good measure, takes out a third and also just casts detect poison and disease. So we just kind of got these three things going on to check what's going on with that gem and anything else that's going on with Rat.
Are you just sniffing? You're just huffing potions?
Oh, yeah, I'm just huffing the fumes from this. This is how Stump ritual casts his spells. He just gets... He
what happens to Stump? Like, what's up with Stump while that's happening?
He sits down.
He sits down Stump. In the corner, just sucking in fumes.
Just wide eyes.
LaMarche is just reclined with fingers steepled, just like... interested, like, no, keep going.
Stump is gone. At this point, Stump is gone.
he's just gonna need a minute.
Pupils huge. Yeah, just give me 11 minutes and I'll
Stump
be good.
Seeing the face of God over in the corner. It's fine.
Our friend's having a little trip across the river and back. We just need to give him a minute. This episode of Mage Hand High Five is sponsored by Multitude Productions and their actual play podcast, Join the Party, as part of their Direct Creator Support Initiative. Multitude Productions believes that podcasts are for people, not corporations, and that the actual play community is full of incredible creators telling some of the most imaginative stories in all of entertainment. Multitude offers high-quality and affordable production services and consulting to help podcast creators of any size capitalize on their own successes. Join the Party is an actual play podcast focused on genre-pushing storytelling and celebrating the artistry of its cast and collaborators, as well as being a love letter to the art form of actual play. Join the Party has multiple seasons available now, with stories ranging from swashbuckling pirate tales in a world of plants and bugs to a weird summer camp beset by monsters. Here's looking at you, Camp Craven fans. Tune in every Tuesday for new episodes of Join the Party. And who knows, if we're your third favorite actual play, they might just become your first or second. We hope you'll check out Multitude and Join the Party at jointhepartypod.com or connect with them at Join the Party Pod on Instagram, Blue Sky, Tumblr, Facebook, and Twitter. Also, be sure to let them know that Mage Hand High Five sent you and that their direct creator support initiative is working. And with that, on with the show.
Do you love audio fiction stories like Welcome to Night Vale or Old Gods of Appalachia? Are you looking for your next favorite podcast?
Or maybe you love actual play shows like Critical Role, but don't always have time to sit down to a 3-hour show with hundreds upon hundreds of episodes.
Then you'll love The Adventures of Bud and Herb, a podcast that is made to binge with episodes around 30 minutes of non-stop, irreverent, yet wholesome fun set in an immersive fantasy world.
Follow along as best friends Bud and Herb, that's us, race against time to find an elusive, monstrous cryptid that has snatched a little boy from our idyllic little town of Mistress Glen.
I'm Bud, the deep gnome rogue.
And I'm Herb, the turtle folk barbarian chef. Each episode, we dig deeper into the mystery of the Cinderwood Walker.
A beast so terrifying it can kill with only its stench. Find out if we live to smell tomorrow.
Listen to The Adventures of Bud and Herb wherever cryptids hide.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
My dearest listener, have I got a secret for you? Bitterton is an improvised comedy podcast inspired by the stories of Jane Austen that tells the tale of a wealthy family's secrets, scandals, and shenanigans. Lady Bitterton has unwed daughters, nosy neighbors, awful country cousins, and now a body to hide. Will the Bitchertons be able to keep their secrets off the pages of Lady Bigwither's gossip sheet? Or will her pen skewer their good name forever? Oh, Bits, what a predicament. Featuring the voices of Katie Maravich, Iffy Waddyway, Carolyn Page, Alex Songsharp, Brian Flaherty, and Cassie Wilson, plus a dance card filled with guest comedians of the very finest quality. But for us to help the seeds of rumor ripen into the juicy plum of scandal, we'll need your help. Bitcherton is heading to Kickstarter on June 13th. Go to bitcherton.com to pre-save the campaign and help us bring this story to life. Ta-ta for now.
While Stump is huffing every potion under the sun, LaMarche says, "Well, while we're waiting, my last question is, why, now that Courtois is gone, should I continue to trust you?"
"Oh, I think we absolutely still have a common enemy, Mr. LaMarche."
"Really? And may I ask who that might be, Mrs. Jameson?"
"I do prefer Briar these days, if it's all the same to you."
"Ah, yes. My condolences on the passing of your husband."
"Well, thank you, darling. I'm sure I'll get by without him. Look, I'm just going out on a limb here, based on what we've seen of you and the help we've gotten from you so far. It seems to me that this town means more to you than just about anything. Am I wrong?"
"You're not wrong."
I pull out the newspaper article and show him and say, "I'm sure you've seen this. The Threed's invading. We all know that means Jameson. And the three of us met on that train that got boarded." we were in Providence for the Mayhew Festival, and we saw what happened to Ford Falls. And it is just real funny to me how every time something like this happens and folks end up dead, Jameson is right there to pick up the pieces and make sure nobody lives to talk about what happened. Now, I know for sure that Thaddeus was involved. A friend of his told me right after he stabbed me in the back. But of course they want to pin it on folks out here to justify that occupation, which I'm sure will find its way to Twin River before too long. Now, I don't know about you, but just from personal experience, I don't think I can buy any of what Tiberius Jameson is selling.
Roll a persuasion check with advantage.
All right, and I'm going to use my new channel divinity emissary of peace for this.
Oh.
Yeah, and I'm going to really, like, focus in on LaMarche, and it'll give me an extra +5 to persuasion for the next 10 minutes.
Okay.
And that's a 24.
A 24?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
LaMarche sighs, puts down his cigar, and for the first time since you've seen him, takes off his circular red sunglasses. He sets them down and looks at you with the palest ice blue eyes you've ever seen. Very intense blue eyes. And he says, "When I was young, my father was also a man of great power. And he taught me a great many things. He taught me the value of a dollar. He taught me the value of a life. He taught me how to spot a liar and how to know when you're beat. I think you're telling me the truth. And not just because I have seen that article. And not just because Jameson troops smashed down the door of my auditorium and then set fire to it. And not just because when my men talked to them, they also said they were looking for you. I know that men like Jameson are never happy. They won't, and they won't, and they won't. Admittedly, I am of a similar stock in that I also want, but there are limitations to my want. I put limits on what I have so that everyone in Twin River doesn't go without. But men like Jameson, they'll just keep coming. And they'll ask for more and more and more until they own you. Salome, I'm a pretty good judge of character. And you don't seem like the type to want to hang around with folks like the Jamesons. If they like to own things, then your marriage to Thaddeus weren't exactly a marriage.
Salome just nods.
So, all that being said, I don't give a shit about what you've done. I don't give a shit about where you're going. As long as you're in Twin River, you're in good company. You, I'm still a little dodgy about that cat. And he points at Rat.
Hey, you and me both.
Understood. We'll work on that part. I have to say, that little statement right there will be a perfect slogan for the town. If you want to just put that on a sign somewhere and display it, maybe shorten it to just that one little sentence about, you know, when you're here, something like that.
I'd probably leave off the whole rant against Jameson.
I think the bit about being married to a Jameson feels a bit bespoke, Hayden.
All right.
I'm just saying I was moved.
All that to say, I've had run-ins with Jameson lately. Jameson owns a controlling stock in a refinery near here.
Shit, don't tell me it's the one in Blackthorn Hollow.
This fully takes LaMarche off guard. He looks at you and he says, Do you know what's going on at Blackthorn Hollow?
No, but I'm desperate to find out.
I'd really like to get that refinery back on track.
My aunts are stuck there. I don't know if you're at all familiar with the Briar sisters, Maggie and Lila. They've been healing around here for decades.
Lots of merchants come through Twin River. I wouldn't know for sure.
I figured as much, but they are better people than I will ever be, and they are caught somewhere in or near that refinery, and if Jameson is holding on to it, then I am even more worried about them than I was 5 minutes ago.
You don't have to worry about Jameson looking in on Blackthorn Hollow. In fact, they refuse to look in on it.
Do they know what's happening there?
I don't know. I told them that the flow of fire powder has stopped, and that as a fire powder company, it would be in their best interest to investigate why this might be. And they told me no. They told me that they would put in a request, and that it could take upwards of 2 to 3 years to process.
Well, did they give you a reason why not?
They told me they had more important things to look into in Threed, and that they couldn't investigate every small town that wasn't putting in their fair share.
Yeah, of course.
You know, I'd like to take every living member of the Jameson family and just punch them right in the genitalia. I feel like they all deserve a real good punch right in that region.
I think you might have to take a number on that one.
You know what? Let's work together on it.
Yeah, you want to join our party?
All that to say, I don't know what's going on in Blackthorn Hollow. Is that where you're thinking of going to next?
That's where I have to go next. Stump, Hayden, I'd love it if you came along.
In fairness, we haven't exactly discussed it. We were, you know, on our way to deal with some other things. And
that's fair. I did pull you into my office first thing.
Well, we might have a little information about what's going on out there. We reached out to one of my aunts, and this was all she was able to get back to us. And I show him the note cards, specifically the one with the weird, like, creature on it, and say, do you have any idea what something like this might be?
He looks at them. He he grabs a pair of reading glasses and puts them on to read them.
Are they also red?
Yeah, they're faintly red. just tinted faintly.
He looks and he says, when you are in the Badlands long enough, particularly in the Sticks, you hear all sorts of things. Stories of lions with the head of men who steal babies from their cribs, or stories of ghosts who walk the earth forever searching for their lost love, or even stories of the dead rising from the marsh to claim the living. But I find that it is not good for the mind to dwell on such stories. He looks again at the card. This I don't know about. And if it is true, then perhaps Blackthorn Hollow is in a spit of trouble.
Yeah. You know, I can't tell you how many times I must ask Thaddeus to help me find my aunts. And I just... all that to say, I really appreciate you trying to help.
I sent men to investigate Blackthorn Hollow, and I never heard back. I assume that they are gone. And because of that, I cannot send more.
Well, don't feel too bad. My husband couldn't send anybody.
Or didn't feel inclined to.
Whatever I can do to help ease your travels from here into...
he taps the card.
Whatever hell hath wrought. Name it. And if it is within my power, it is yours.
You think you can try and send some of the folks looking for us off in a different direction?
I'll say if any hounds come sniffing, I'll deal with them appropriately.
I think that'd go a long way.
It would indeed.
Stump, it's about that time that your that your potions kick in. The identify spell. Similar to last time, it does not tell you in words what the object does. It shows you a series of pictures in order to have you get the basic understanding of what it does.
Mm-hmm.
You see Rat, and you see a pale white hand on Rat's head. Behind Rat stands Courtois, and it is a stance of power over Rat. And you get the sense that this hand is not only on Rat's head, it is in Rat's head.
Okay.
You see that there are a couple layers to this magic. You see the picture of Courtois with her hand on Rat. Laid over that image is another one of a black stone. And you see it catch fire, destroying everything around it. Stump, let me have you roll insight.
Insight.
Or investigation.
That's much better.
Yay!
There you go.
That's a 24.
Yeah, you know what? Things start to click together. Like the way the auditorium spontaneously caught fire after two assassins were killed in it. Or how the Otyug spontaneously caught fire after an assassin was killed in it. You get the sense that this is an anti-tampering spell. So that if the bearer dies, or if the magic is messed with in any way, that the black rock will spontaneously combust, destroying the bearer. Stump, you've seen something like this before. You flash back to a day you remember well, perhaps better than any other day. On the surface, this was a job like any other. Steal an artifact, some old world arcane bullshit that Hazak could sell in one of their auctions that don't exist, and some rich asshole would buy it and hang it on his wall, or use it as a fancy drink coaster, or blow himself up trying to turn it on. Who cares? So long as you get paid. The sight, however, was unusual. Most thefts of this caliber involved offices in Threed's financial district or warehouses on the east side near the docks. Why would Larissa have you steal from a church? Now, don't go getting the wrong idea. You don't care. Stealing from a church is like stealing from any other building. But what would they have that's worth the trouble? You recall sneaking down corridors deep within the Focus Indominant, a massive cathedral devoted to the worship of the Eternal Flame at the very center of Threed. It was easy to snatch the white priest robes you wear, and you descend into the catacombs beneath the cathedral. Here, entombed in stone and masonry, lie the grates within the canon of the church. You think about this practice. Sealing away their beloved deceased in shrines devoted to their righteousness, their passions in life. There are empty corridors yet, which means the practice continues to this day. And for a flickering moment, you wonder if Hazak would do anything like that for you. It stops you for a moment. And then you think, why would you care? There's only the next job. And it's not like these dead people enjoy their mausoleums any more than they would a grave in a ditch. You push onward. You round a corner and jump back. Guarding a closed-off corridor are two figures, dressed in all black. You remember your instructions and figure this to be the place. But how do you get in?
Yeah, so Stump sees these guards and grabs a vial from his chest and peeks around the corner and just lobs it down to the end where the guards are. And when it lands on the ground, it explodes into like a puff of like sleeping gas almost to knock him out.
Cool.
Yeah, you toss it around the corner and sort of press your back against the wall. You hear the vial shatter. You hear, hey, what? And then coughing as this sort of gas emanates. And when you peek around the corner again, both guards have slumped over onto the floor.
I go head in.
You head over to the door. It's locked, but a couple lockpicks, the door swings open. It seems that this corridor was turned into a dungeon cell of some sort. An iron door has been fitted into the place. Within this short hall, there stands a bed shackled to the wall, and on the floor crouches a figure. They're back to you. Larissa didn't say anything about this. As you approach, the figure speaks, their back still to you, in a voice that creaks like a hinge long unused.
Are you here to take me home?
That could depend on where your home is, I guess.
Oh, I want to go home. He wants me home.
Okay, who is he in this situation?
The figure turns. He's a wood elf. Or he used to be at some point. His matted hair hangs low in his face, but his eyes, from what you can see of them, hold a glazed, almost dead look. His skin is pale and hangs and clings to his bones. His shirt hangs open, and to your horror, you see the artifact you were looking for. A metallic circle, glowing red light at its center, is buried deep in the man's sternum.
Okay, this is not where I thought this was gonna go. Hey, buddy, could I have that thing in your chest? Any chance you'd be willing to like part with it?
He looks at it and looks at you and says,
"You want to keep me from going home? He calls me home, and you cannot keep me from him."
Okay. And at that, Stump realizes that this is not going to be the easy way, so he decides to take the other easy way and pulls out a short sword and just goes and tries to kill this guy.
Ooh. Okay. Yeah, I mean, he is basically skin and bones. It does not take a whole lot to overpower this man, and you cut him down. And as you stand over him and blood begins to pool, he looks up at you and cracks a bloody grin. And he says,
"I see. You want to go home too. We'll all go home one day."
And then his head gently falls to the ground. You stand there thinking about the horrible task ahead when you find, quite suddenly, your thoughts to be in vain. The flesh surrounding the amulet peels back with a... The amulet pops out of his chest and clatters to the floor at your feet. As it rolls into a dead stop, the light glowing in its center goes out. And you feel no energy or magic coming from it.
Well, another day, another dollar, I guess. I tear off a piece of the robe I'm wearing and I, you know, wrap the amulet in it and carry it so I'm not touching it. Because that'd be kind of gross because it was just in a dude's chest.
You're just in a dude.
It was just in a dude.
Just in a dude.
Yeah. You wrap the amulet in this cloth, and as you do, the cloth begins to stain red. You pop it into your satchel, and as you leave the room and round that same corner, you hear a voice coming from down the opposite hall.
"Find that amulet. We still have much to learn from its guidance, and find who sent our beloved Alistair to his place with the flame."
I hear that, and I just get out of there.
You run. The shadow of the focus and dominant seems to follow you as you flee down the street. And as you turn a corner, a voice whispers in your ear.
You've taken something very valuable from us. I can't imagine you know what it is. Whoever hired you probably doesn't even know. And if they did, they wouldn't share that with you. So I'm going to offer you a choice. Return that amulet to us, and the Eternal Flame will reward you greatly. One with your skills would do well among our ranks, even without faith.
And for a moment, Stump, you pause. You are getting ready to return to Hazak to hand over this amulet. But what's the difference? What's the difference between returning the amulet to the church and giving it to Hazak? What's the difference to you?
Stump looks and kind of thinks about the mausoleum beneath the church and the guy we now know as Alistair kind of being used by someone, and thinks about how this is kind of the only life he's ever known, but he just keeps getting used and hasn't been able to make his own decisions his entire life. And I think for the first time in as long as Stump can remember, he decides to just take the amulet and run and put his life in his own hands and deal with the consequences as they come.
For the first time, Stump, your own hand is at the helm. And for 20 years, you ran until you were found again. In the present, you remember that enforcer of the church said something about learning from the amulet's guidance. That perhaps this black rock placed within the flesh of Rat was a learned skill.
Stump, you glazed over a bit there. Did you figure something out?
This stone is basically casting a dominate person spell on Rat right now. It seems to be kind of layered, so it's not just something we can do, but like a really powerful cleric or maybe a really powerful wizard might be able to do something with it. It's beyond my means. We might want to make sure that we're clear of anybody we see with a stone like this in them when they die, because I think they explode.
So you're saying that if we try to help Rat and it goes wrong, not only do I get to see him die again, I will die in the process as well.
Well, I mean, only if you're in the area.
Not exactly consolation that I was looking for on that one, Stump.
Maverick pipes up and says, "So you're telling me that there is, in fact, a bomb in my beloved office?"
Yeah, I mean, if you kill him, but
are you
we're
saying that
let
we
you...
should leave now? Are we dismissed from your office? Why are you giving me this attitude in this moment?
Hey, I just learned the same thing that you did.
Ooh, darling.
We got a lot going on right now. As long as Rat stays alive and I can make sure that happens, no one's blowing up.
I'd love to find a non-combustible solution to this particular issue. You understand?
I think if we try to take it out right now, it's going to blow up or cause Rat a lot of problems. So best bet is just keep Rat alive until we can figure it out.
It's about that time you hear a knock at the door and a tired voice comes from the other side saying, "Mav, it's me." The door opens and you see this very tired goblin man. He has large glasses that magnify his eyes. His eyelids are drooping. His ears are drooping. And he walks in and he says, "Mav, you do know what time it is." And Maverick says, "Doc, I would not call you if it was not important. I need you to find out everything you can about this young man in the back and the black stone in his head. Something about dominating person."
Yeah, like a control, like someone from far away controlling through the rock.
The doc goes over to Rat and says, "Fascinating. I would need to take a closer look.
at him, if you were to release him into my care, I would not harm him, but I would be able to get a closer look.
You trust this fellow, Mr. LaMarche?
LaMarche says, without exaggeration, I say that I owe the doc my life several times over. The doc turns to you and says, this is a friend.
This is family. And I will say, I very much appreciate you coming and helping us out in our hour of need. You should be forewarned that when conscious, this individual does have some skills and penchant for assassination. So
keep him tied up.
Very tightly.
Well, perhaps we could keep him in a safe location. Maverick, would we consider putting him in the sink for the time being? And Maverick says, well, the sink is under renovation.
The sink is more of a moat at this point.
The sink's
sunk. It's a little clogged.
Well, I'm sure there are other places. Maverick, I will need access to these locations as well as any time that can be spared.
As much as I would like to stay with him and do whatever I can to get him out of the situation, this is far beyond my own skill set. So, yes, please.
Of course. But there are limits to my knowledge and limits to my abilities. I will do as much as I can without harming the individual, but if the need arises for harm, I will consult you first.
That is very much appreciated, and we may be moving on and before you're completed your various studies, but we do have a hookup over at the with the sending wizards.
We've got a bit of rapport
with them. So if you just,
I know Earl.
Oh, you know.
Do you know?
Oh,
do you know Earl, or do you just know Earl?
I don't know what you're implying, but in the meantime, perhaps I could have some of your men move this individual to a more secure location.
And Maverick ushers in a few guards who begin to move Rat, and he says, Hayden, is there anything you would like to...
Does Rat have the real dagger on him? I know we saw the spiritual weapon of the dagger.
He does not.
Okay.
You don't know if it was lost or taken from him, but he does not have it.
I open up my bag. I pull out this little coin. It's not an actual piece of currency. It's just this little, basically this hunk of useless metal, but it's the first thing that that I stole, and I just slip it into Rat's pocket and say, all right, buddy, you're not going to remember what this is when you first look at it, but hopefully you'll understand in time. Once you get your mind back in order and everything, you'll see this, you'll remember. I've been holding on to it, and now I need you to hold on to it for me until you are ready to give it back. So I'm expecting it, so just make sure you bring it back to me, all right?
Rat does not respond. The guards pick him up and begin to move him out of the room. And as they do, Dr. Merrimack places a hand on your shoulder, Hayden, and says,
you will be reunited with your family member again. I will do my best to see that it is in this life.
Thank you. And please let me know anything you learn, even if it's the smallest sliver. I just want to hear what's going on.
He nods solemnly and leaves. And Maverick says,
well, it's been a pretty long day. And I'm sure everybody's itching to rest. So you're free to leave. And if you need anything, ask a guard or, hell, come into my house. You've already been here. The door's open. Just let yourselves in.
I do have a giant demonic cat that I need to go check in on.
Oh, shoot. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You know what? If she needs me in the morning, I can check in, and she'll be there. If she doesn't need me, she'll be gone, and
yeah,
I'll just live
with
that.
Yeah, the thing about cats is they just sort of do what they want.
They do, don't they?
If you brought Yolanda inside, all she'd want to do was go outside. If you put her outside, she'd want to come inside. Better to just leave her be.
I was enamored with the idea of having, you know, a little pet. Our lives don't really match up with that kind of a scenario.
That is not a little pet.
Yeah, the fact that anybody's got a pet cat is honestly a damn miracle.
So we are...
So you start heading back.
Hey, Charlie, you've been surprisingly quiet all this time.
I'll say that there was a point where Maverick pointed out the three of you, and that Charlie waited outside for that conversation.
Mm. Okay, sounds good.
As we reconnect with Charlie, I think I just immediately kind of throw my arms around them and try to give them just the most, like, comforting, almost maternal hug I can muster.
Oh, they return it immediately.
Well, get ready, because it's getting even bigger, and I just hop on the same hug.
Stump
just, get in here.
Stump does just kind of like a back, like pat on the back.
I grab Stump and
yeah.
Bring him in. Charlie, honey, are you okay? How you doing?
I'm okay. I might just need a little bit of time.
Sure.
To put my head back on my shoulders. This is sort of the first time that I've been captured and almost tortured before.
Let's make that a one-time scenario. How about that?
Okay.
Hey, I think I know a grumpy old man who's real worried about you, so why don't we get you back to him, and we'll start there.
That sounds good. I'd like to see him.
And we all need to sleep, so why don't we start moving in that direction?
You head back to the Traveler's Respite. And as you do, you see that the respite is sort of at a corner. It's situated on a corner, and outside are benches. And sitting on one of the benches is Portens. And as the group nears, he looks up, he sees you, and he jumps up and full-on sprints towards the group and just bear hugs Charlie. It seems like he's trying to say something, but it is muffled through the sobs as he embraces his adopted kid.
Yeah, I think we better give him a minute.
Yeah, I think so.
He turns to the group and says, I cannot even begin to... How could I repay you? You've given me my life back.
Well, I mean, you kind of saved our behinds in Providence, so I guess we're sort of even, aren't we?
He doesn't really say anything. He's just sort of overwhelmed.
You still holding on to that note from my mama?
You see that he has held it the whole time that you were gone. And as soon as you ask, he extends his hand and gives it back to you.
Thank you, darling. Oh, hey, we brought you a cigar from Laterre.
From Laterre?
Yeah, is that the one? Is that the...
How did you get this?
Don't
we
worry
know
about
a guy.
It.
Let's just call it let's just call it repayment for commandeering your life for several days.
Incredible. If it weren't such a late night, I would say that this was the perfect time to smoke it. So I guess I'll just have to smoke it tomorrow. Charlie, I might even let you have some.
No, Charlie, do not do that.
Honey, it's just one cigar. You know what? It's better for a kid.
No.
Maya and Maggie always said it's just better if you do it while we're around.
No. Don't do that under any circumstances.
You know, kids are going to experiment.
I don't care how delicious they are.
Kid, look, kids are going to do what they're going to do. You might as well have them in a smoke environment.
Drugs are bad. Drugs are bad.
Sometimes drugs are fun, is all I'm saying.
Yes, but doesn't mean they're not bad. Drugs are bad. Cigars are bad. Don't smoke, kid.
All that to say, you head back and you all get a long rest.
What does Hayden look like right now?
Let's say that once we left the sink, I changed back into Winona.
Okay.
So I've got the same face that you first saw when you first met me on the train.
Okay. Salome kind of looks at Hayden and says, well, it has been... one hell of a big day for you, hasn't it? Between finding your long-lost brother and, proverbially speaking, letting your hair down in front of us for the first time.
Right.
How you feeling?
Yeah, I hope I didn't frighten you or anything like that.
frighten us.
I haven't really shown that to anyone before. Well, except for this girl. She's the only one who's seen me like this. Or like I'm supposed to look.
Honey, I think it kind of suits you. I mean, for one thing, it seems to take a little less effort from you. That little line between your eyebrows went away for half a second.
Oh, you know, now that you mention it, it does take a lot out of me just holding on to someone else's face for so long. Do y'all, since just three of us, if it makes you uncomfortable, feel free to say so, but y'all mind if I, you know, drop the act for a bit?
Of course, go for it.
Honey, there is no way that you looking like yourself would make either of us uncomfortable.
All right.
Matter of fact, I think it's real nice. Look at that. Look, you got this long, beautiful white hair. You were just holding out on us this whole time.
You know, honestly, I have no idea how to style it because I never look like this when I'm around other people. So I haven't put the effort into, like, what do I do with this hair?
Hey, do you mind if I try something?
Ooh, are we going to play with hair?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. I'm so
excited. Okay, come here.
You don't
get a long rest. You just have a sleepover the whole night.
Stay up all night braiding Hayden's hair.
Oh, Stump pushes Salome out of the way to get there first to get at the hair.
Stump, come on. Hey, look, you take left, I'll take right. I'm better at left anyway.
Fine.
This doesn't need to be violent.
Come here, Hayden.
Oh, yes, it does.
I hope you don't have a sensitive scalp.
Stump starts massaging Hayden's scalp.
Oh, this is different.
Just the right side, though.
Pain is beauty, darling.
This is the best.
This is precious.
As we're kind of just braiding Hayden's hair, I'll just say, dear heart, I think Courtois had a lot of hurtful things to say to all three of us. But the things that she said to Stump and me were honestly just objectively true. Stump is a thief. I am a murderer. There is not much we can do about that. But I have met probably more than my fair share of monsters in my day, and you are not one of them, no matter what you look like. I'd rather see you not putting so much work in to be somebody else when you could just comfortably be yourself in front of us.
Well, maybe in front of you. I've never known anybody else like me. I don't even know if my birth family looks like this. I just think it's not safe. I mean, I really appreciate being able to be like this around you, but there's a whole lot of other people in this world who would look at me and monster is what they would think.
Yeah, I guess that's probably true with the world that we do live in, but I don't know. I think it might be a little more dangerous that there's plenty of folks walking around looking real unassuming and monster's not what you'd think of them.
I mean, it's a nice idea. Are you really suggesting I go out into the world like this?
Do what you feel most comfortable with. You know, we'll be here. We can't always control what other people do. You got to make sure you're comfortable before you can help anybody else.
You know, the world where Hayden is fully Hayden has been very small. And if nothing else, I'm happy that can be even just a little bit larger. We'll see how I feel about growing it more from there, but at least I can be Hayden here.
Well, Hayden, I think we're done with this. I think it looks pretty good.
How's it look?
Oh, God, does it look a hot mess?
Excuse me,
no,
Stump side
roll
looks...
for it, right?
Okay. Yeah.
What do we roll? Sleight of hand?
Both of you. Sleight of hand check right now.
Can I do it with proficiency? I feel like Salome's proficient in hair braiding.
I think Stump has proficiency just because he's been braiding his daughter's hair. Like, I could see that.
Yeah.
Okay. Look, Salome's been fancy for years. She's been braiding her own.
Yes,
okay.
But...
yeah, I guess I could see that. You know what? Okay, fuck it. Like, everybody gets advantage. Who gives a shit?
I mean, Hayden certainly does.
Nat 20.
Nat 20?
What's your modifier, though?
Oh, nothing.
That's a 24.
Fuck. Yeah, but I crit. But
sorry,
I crit,
23.
Okay, but I crit.
My non-crit is still better.
I'd really rather just be symmetrical, honestly.
No. My side is like a waterfall French braid sort of situation.
Okay. Hayden, you look at your hair.
You're about to make this sweet now.
You look at your hair, and you wonder if this is the first time that you've done anything with your hair. Your hair. Not Winona's. Not some guy in a bar. Your hair. And you didn't even do it. These two people that you met on a train braided your hair and told you they were your friends. And the way you feel right now, you could take on the world. The dangers outside, Jameson, the church, anyone. You could face them right now with these two friends at your side. And as you go to bed, Hayden, you're on cloud nine. In the next bed, Salome, your mind still reels about what could be going on in Blackthorn Hollow. Maverick doesn't know what's happening. And these cards, they don't bode well. And it keeps you up. Stump, you go to bed. And you dream of an immense black city. Every surface polished glass. And as you look down its avenues, you see no one. You are alone. And as you look into the sky, you see the sun above you is blood red. And a voice whispers in your ears, and it says, "I see you, Stump, and I know you." And that is where we'll pick up next time.
Thanks so much for listening to episode 15 of The Badlands. Stay tuned after this for a promo from our friends at Rolling With Difficulty. Want to hear us talk more about our show? Go check out our Patreon at patreon.com/magehandhighfive. We've got a whole awesome bonus podcast called Mage Hand Down Low where we get into the nitty gritty, and it's fantastic. You're missing out. Thanks to Jacob Kirzner for our orchestrations and Shane Smith for our logo and our cover art. Go to our website at www.magehandhighfive.com and look for us all over social media. We're on TikTok. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram. We're on Facebook. We're on Discord. Wherever we may be, we're going to be there at Mage Hand High Five. Go to your podcatcher of choice and throw a 5-star review our way. And now we're going to shout out all of our lovely patrons over on Patreon. We've got Al. Shout out to Al. Al Forrest Oakey, Allison DeVelvis, Am Lovelies, Avery Spar, Carrie Lee, Chicken Too Tasty, Doss Carpenter, Debbie, Diana Bacon, Evan Noon, Jonathan Gunn, Jolotta Pang, Chloe Utley, Laura, Elda Soul, Liz Spar, Michael Clevenger, Mira the Nerd, Nathan Ritter, Sammy Richardson, and Tyler Gardner. Thank you all so much. I can't imagine a better person. Tell your friends about us. Tell your foes about us. Tell me something good. And when you do it, use the hashtag MHH5. And hey, how about a high five?
Welcome to the Planescape, where good and evil clash, where law and order maintain their delicate balance. Among the legends written in the stars of the astral sea, are these for idiots?
That's how we do it on the Plane of Fire.
Just don't break any of the furniture, all right?
Everyone who doesn't have fire resistance and is eating the hot sauce, please make a constitution saving throw.
Okay, mate.
Their aim, repeating history.
And fortunately, my arms of the astral self have a 10-foot reach, so I don't even need to close to whack them.
Is that your whole turn? Please say yes.
The crew of the Spelljammer Per Aspera take on any job, ill-advised or otherwise, on Rolling With Difficulty, a D&D actual play podcast, led by intrepid alliterative dungeon master Austin Funk, players Sophia.
I'm a really good mechanic and I'm gonna fire off the next bolt.
Noir.
But just in case, he'll begin putting up his conspiracy board.
Wally.
It's best if I just serve one up for y'all.
And Red.
Oh, okay, a fight's happening. I know what to do.
Explore all the mysteries and hijinks the Planescape has to offer. From the streets of Sigil straight to your favorite audio platform or YouTube, listen along and you'll see that while this crew may not be the stuff of legends yet, they're definitely rolling with difficulty.